This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays. With a refreshing strawberry lemonade twist, it's Natterdays.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back, a College World Series title. Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
This is the type of show that I always have looked forward to basically since basketball season ended, or when we pretty much knew that they weren't making it into the NCAA tournament. It's like, all right, so when's the next point in time where this sports talk show, it's always fun, but when's it going to be more fun? And it's at this point in time when it's like, hey, postseason has arrived. Now it gets down to the nitty-gritty. No more taking days off, hoping that, hey, well, you lose this series. Hey, it's okay. You can come back next time. Nope. There's none of that anymore. It's essentially win or go home when it comes to baseball.
And, it's going to be a fun weekend. Hopefully the weather is not going to be as wet as projected. Now, there's rain in the forecast for every day, but the chances of rain are like 30%. So I don't think we're going to get weather that's going to wash out the weekend or force this thing, into like a all day Monday deal, or it doesn't appear that way right now.
Right.
But you got to remember, it's not just the Arkansas game you got to play these first couple of days. And there's two games a day for sure, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, because there's, opening round, and then you got an elimination game ahead of the semifinal, and then the final on Sunday night. Well, there's got to be an elimination game ahead of that. All these things have to go in a certain order, just the way a regional works. So there's two games a day, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and you got to get both of those in. And when you get to the elimination part, that game has to happen first.
Yes. So, yeah.
Particularly on Sunday.
Yeah. Well, the weather's going to be beautiful today and tomorrow,
right,
according to the forecast.
Sunday, there's a third. I saw last night, unless it's changed since the 6 o'clock news last night, there's a 30% chance of rain. The temperatures, you're right, are great, like low 80s.
Oh, it's perfect.
But there was a chance of rain, and Sunday was the best chance of some pretty good rain across the region.
Yeah. So. And when this is something I honestly didn't really look at as far as the schedule goes and everything, that you brought to my attention before the show started, Tommy, that if Arkansas wins game one tonight, they will play tomorrow at 6 p.m.
Correct.
And if they win that game, they will play on Sunday at 8 p.m.
Well, you got, again, the team that if Arkansas is successful and wins game one and two Friday and Saturday, the loser of, or the team they would play would have to become the winner of that elimination game that's played earlier in the day. So that game is like a 2 o'clock first pitch. So you may not even get it off by 8 o'clock if that first game went long, extra innings, because there needs to be a minimal amount of rest for that team in between having to play a doubleheader. That's why we talk about winning your first two games is so paramount, because if you lost, let's just say Arkansas beats Central Connecticut State, they move on to the Saturday night game at 6 o'clock. The loser of that game, whether it's Arkansas, TCU, or Cal, whoever it's going to be, let's just say Central Connecticut State gets eliminated in the 2 o'clock game on Saturday, someone's going to have to turn around on Sunday and play a doubleheader. Whoever loses the 6 o'clock game Saturday night, you got to play again Sunday afternoon. And then on less than 24 hours rest. And then if you're successful and get out of that game, you got to fight your way against presumably the home team in Arkansas on Sunday night. And you're doing it by then. You've played one, two, three. You'll be to your fourth starting pitcher, where the team you're playing will only have played three. They'll be on their third arm because they've only played two games at that point.
Yeah.
So it's just paramount, winning game one and two.
Yeah. And I understand that, when you mentioned the games on Sunday and how they have to, the team that plays that first game and the winner of that first game on Sunday will have to play a doubleheader and play it later. Could they not have done it at 12-6 instead of 2-8? I mean, is it a television thing?
No, because none of these games are on real TV, or what's the technical term, linear TV, which
sounds
would be
good to
like
me.
Something on your satellite or cable.
Yeah.
All of these games are only on the streaming, so.
Hmm. So why couldn't you do it 12 to 6 instead of, I mean, because 8 p.m. is a tough game for anybody to get to on a Sunday night, especially when they have work in the next morning. So not that I'm complaining or anything.
Well,
like
but
that,
noon's hard to get to for, you know, for people that don't go to church. I mean, people that go to church, noon on a Sunday is hard to get to as well.
Go to the early mass. Fine.
I don't go to a Catholic church. So I don't have mass.
Well,
now what?
Yeah.
Well, now what, cowboy?
Yeah, I'm just saying. I think more people would be apt to go at noon than they would at 8 p.m.
No matter what you do, you're not going to please everybody.
Oh, I know. But has it always been this way? Because I don't remember it being 8 p.m. in previous years.
I don't remember that either.
So
I'm just going by what's on the ticket. I guess we need to confirm that.
Well, no, I'm looking at ArkansasRazorbacks.com. Right? I mean, they have the schedule set up.
8 o'clock. Because I know on the tickets that I have in my hand, it says 8. That's like, what?
Yeah. You know? What is this, midweek college basketball? 8 p.m.? My goodness.
Tuesday?
Yeah. I think we're probably going to do a pregame for that one, right?
Right.
Okay,
I'm on. That might be the game I get to go to this weekend, so yeah.
Yeah. Is it bad of me?
I'll give you some live reports from the scene.
Okay, well, perfect. Yeah. Well, is it bad of me that I kind of think Arkansas is going to lose game 2? If it ends up being Cal, just because I've been as much research as I could do on a team like Cal, I don't know. I don't like that matchup. I just don't. Not saying they'd lose the game too if they faced each other again.
That's the game. With Campbell. Why would you think they would lose that second game with Isaiah Campbell going for Arkansas
left,
and Cal or TCU, either one, not having their ace,
left-handed pitchers, man.
Okay.
Cal's got some good ones.
That's a good, reasonable analysis there. Because Arkansas has struggled against lefties.
Yeah.
We saw it at A&M. Arkansas couldn't hit the ball. But, yeah, if they got a lefty that can throw in the upper 80s, low 90s, it's got some good stuff. That could create a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's really on base now, because I could see it being like a 2-1 game where Arkansas can only get one run on the board. Isaiah Campbell pitches a beauty, but he gets no help from the offense side of it. So, that's kind of where it's at with my scary matchups going forward in this postseason. Is it's just, man, if they go up against a great left-handed pitcher, you don't feel good about it. At least I don't. And so, if that ends up being the case against Cal in game 2, I know it won't be their ace and all of that. But just looking at the roster that they have and some of the guys that they've had pitching, if they end up going with the left-handers, which I'm sure they will, because I assume that the Cal coach is a smart guy where he was able to look at scouting reports and everything like that. Yeah, I assume that was the case. But, if he's going with the left-handers, it's just I just don't see it boding very well for Arkansas. And that's my whole point. And let's be honest, too, folks. If Arkansas wins against Cal, it's not an upset or anything like that. I mean, Cal's a good team. They're in the postseason play. But if Arkansas can't score against these opponents and score against left-handed pitchers, you can't win games. So that's, I guess, if there was ever one concern that I have with Razorback baseball heading into whether it's the regional or super regional or whatever, it's the left-handed pitchers. I mean, that's really kind of the bane of the existence of this year's team is just those left-handed pitchers.
That's good analysis there.
Thanks, Tommy.
But because that has been, as you said, a problem, and that's why the A&M series, I think, turned the way it was. They were really good left-handed pitchers. So how good can their number 2 lefty be? Now, that would be with Cal. With TCU, same thing?
They don't have – just from looking at them, they don't have as many.
Right.
As many issues there with the left-handers. But, if you're a team going up against Arkansas, though, wouldn't you almost like – if you have a great right-handed pitcher or a good left-handed pitcher, wouldn't you want to go with the good left-handed pitcher?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
I think that gives you your best shot of winning against a really good Razorback baseball team.
Which makes you think that Arkansas may be facing nothing but left-handed pitchers in this postseason play, assuming that the other team has availability for it.
Assuming they have one, yeah. Not everybody has a good – throw me out there an average or below average lefty. Arkansas will light him up.
Yeah, without a doubt. You got to have at least a quality lefty.
When Dave was on, I don't know, we're going to play some more of that today, but maybe part of what we replay today, because Dave Van Horn was with us in the 8 o'clock hour yesterday. If you missed that, you can catch it on hitthatline.com and our podcast from yesterday. We talked about the lack of hitting down the stretch. Hey, why was the bats slumping? Why were the bats quiet? And we faced some really good pitchers, and it started at A&M. And a lot of these guys were throwing low 90s, upper 90s. Saw some guys, what did he say, touching 98?
Yeah.
You know, now I don't, again, we've talked about this for a week or two, and I keep making the point, it's a step down in class a little bit. And I use a horse racing term. You're stepping down in class a little bit when you go from SEC play and SEC tournament play, particularly, to you get into the first weekend of a regional. The teams you're seeing this weekend, the pitchers you're seeing, the hitters you're seeing, not that there's not a good individual hitter. Cal's got, you know, Cal's got some players. But the lineup 1 through 9 that a pitcher will have to face, the rotation you're going to have to see for 2 or 3 consecutive days out of teams, just not going to be the same this weekend as it will be. There's a reason these teams coming here are, A, having to travel this far, and, B, they're the 2 and the 3 seed. So a lot of teams, as we know, out of the SEC, 6 of the 10 that got in are 1 seeds.
Yeah. I mean, Arkansas faced some great pitching in the SEC tournament, but if they struggle against these teams this weekend, I'm not going to say it means the doom, but that's not what you want to see. You want to see the bats get going in these series, even if they face some left-handed batters. You want to see it get going. You want to see it get to that point. So either way, you know, it's going to be fascinating.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, a light lager brewed with a phenomenal strawberry lemonade flavor that's perfect for bringing the fun to every occasion. The new Natural Light Natterdays.
Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Now, we mentioned how SEC meetings are about to come to an end and how today will be reportedly when the vote will happen on uplifting the alcohol ban that has been in place since pretty much the beginning of time in SEC football stadiums.
Since Prohibition, they had Prohibition.
Pretty much. And, you know, there's been a lot of people that have said how the SEC, a conference that is normally ahead of the game in so many different things when it comes to their sports, that this has kind of been the one thing that they haven't been proactive compared to other conferences.
They lift this ban. What do you boys bet on this? They allow alcohol in the stadium, and the search for you bootlegging stuff in like we've always...
Is next level.
Now all of a sudden, these are like TSA searches at the gates to find out if you got a little pint of whiskey in your boot. You know, where before they just, come on through, you know. And everybody knows that there's some amongst us, some more than others, slipping a few things in that they're not supposed to.
Yeah. He's got to be craftier about it.
I'm just saying that they will go, they'll have like glass detectors.
Yeah.
They'll find some way, now that they can sell it and profit off of it in the stadiums, they're going to assemble a team of experts in Birmingham to find an innovative way for all of these stadiums to come up with ways of detecting booze on your person.
Yeah.
Now it will become a big deal that they can profit on it.
Well, I mean, an early game in September, if somebody was wearing jeans and boots that they came walking in, they'd be like, whatever, come on in.
Right there.
But now it may be like, sir, sorry, shorts are the only thing allowed here in September because we know what you're hiding down there. So, you know.
Why are you wearing that trench coat, sir?
it's only 98 degrees. I mean, obviously, you got to be ready for the rain that may come later today, but. But that's the thing.
Am I right about that, though?
No.
Now it will become a big deal to bootleg something into the stadium.
And I think that's what some people are scared about, like mainly referring to Razorback baseball games, that if it ever happened to where you allowed alcohol sales in baseball, then it's like, all right, Hogpen, you're not bringing in your own stuff anymore. If you want it, you got to buy it from us.
Well, if you were the university, wouldn't you do the same thing?
No, I would do the same thing. I'm just saying from the fan perspective, though, it would be a major blow to the fun and the atmosphere that's out there, because that's been one of the things that people have enjoyed is bringing in their own food and beverage and just having a field day out there. But, you know, that's kind of the downside to these rules that end up happening.
You can't have a good time in life without alcohol. Y'all know that, right?
Well, of course you can.
It is possible.
Listen, most football games and basketball, it's like basketball, for instance. Have you had fun at basketball games, Tommy?
Well, it's been a little while.
Yeah, but how many times have you been hammered at a basketball game or at least buzzed at a basketball game?
I wish I had been.
Yeah, well, of course. But you see what I'm saying. You can still enjoy a Razorback event without having
it. I'm just making sure y'all knew that life could be enjoyable without alcohol.
Yes.
I wasn't sure if y'all were aware.
No. So, we're very aware.
I guess we need to also be clear, because we're using the word alcohol very
loosely,
universally here. We're not talking about having, you know, rum and cokes at every concession stand.
It's beer.
It's beer. maybe some wine too, I guess.
Yeah, for the ladies, you know, you got to
and tie.
Yeah, and tie. Yeah,
it's drink wine.
Okay, wine spritzers or whatever it is. Those Seagram's,
some Trulies or something. Something like that.
White Claws.
They're healthy.
Whatever.
They're healthy.
Yeah,
whatever.
I had some with Blair the other day.
Got to watch your girlish figure
right
there. But yes, it's about beer, and that's what it comes down to. Because it's not going to be just like open bar. Walk in. They got if you want a mojito, here you go. Right. It's not going to be that way.
We get those Smirnoffs that he likes to drink.
The Smirnoff Twisters.
Yeah.
The ice ones. Yeah, you're gonna get them iced. Yeah,
right.
I mean, but yeah, it's gonna be beer, and so. So that's what it comes down to. But it's also
You're not going to be able to get Glenlivet on the rocks.
No. Not going to be anything to that level. But it's kind of like
this football team doesn't start winning more games. I think that should be discussed. You know.
Yeah, you're going to have your alcohol sales really go through the roof.
I mean, like hard stuff. Mainline it. Get me one right here in the arm.
Yeah, just inject it into your veins.
Straight in.
But you know, it's like Georgia, for instance, when we mentioned the other day that they had. Said that they're going to allow alcohol sales in Sanford Stadium because of that. Well, essentially, if you want to have alcohol in the stadium, you have to donate $25,000 over a five-year span. That's the only place in the seating area.
How could they afford that?
Well, you
mean the fans?
Yes, the fans.
Oh, I thought you meant the university would have to donate.
No. The fans are the ones that, if you want to be in the area.
Okay, gotcha.
If you want to be in the area that sell alcohol, you have to donate $25,000 over a five-year span. So, but if this rule gets uplifted, then... because that's the thing, too, is I'll be curious to see how many stadiums just jump right on this and say, all right, let's go right now, beer,
well,
bring it in.
It won't happen for the 19 season.
Right.
Because, A, you got to go through, I say that, I mean, these universities have a lot of power and a lot of people to make things happen. I mean, I guess you could, university already has a beer and wine license that I know we've discussed before, but it's only for limited areas of the state. Laws, rules, and responsibilities you have. People aren't overserved. And listen, this goes on in basically every professional venue in America, right? I mean, you go to a Royals game, a Rangers game, a Cardinals game, a Chiefs game. I mean, they figure out how to do it. So, I mean, it's not like it's impossible to do. But you still got to make sure the staff that has always worked for you and Manning Concession stands for, was it Sodexo or whoever, you know, that they have all the rules and regulations and things in place. And because there are just legal requirements and how you're going to go about selling these things. Because the last thing the university needs is like bad publicity because a 16-year-old got sold a beer.
Yeah, that'd be...
Because someone didn't check their ID.
Yeah, that'd be like the worst nightmare you could have if you're the University of Arkansas. Yeah, there's going to be some... There's a lot of...
Or someone overserved and they get in their car and leave and hurt somebody or themselves. You know, there's just... There's risk aligned with this too, not just for Arkansas, but for any school that's introducing this.
Yeah, because you don't flip a switch and then after that, hey, here's beer. I mean, there's a lot of loopholes you have to go through.
All of this is an effort to counter slumping attendance, right? It started to dip about a point a year, about a percentage point a year, and
last year had the biggest drop as far as percentages go, just in the past 10 years in a 1 year span.
And I don't know that. You know, if beer is the reason you haven't been going, I don't think selling beer is going to be the reason you come back.
No.
Because you can go a lot of places and get, if you want to go watch the game somewhere, get cheap beer during games. You can buy beer for, $1 a can at home. You know, but it takes one more excuse off the table for some people to not go. I think it's bad policy on any school's behalf. That, hey, if I pay enough money and sit in a premium enough area, I have the right, the privilege to have a cold beer while watching the game. But if I'm one of the unwashed masses that has to sit in the cheap seats.
You common folks.
If I'm with the commoners, I'm not allowed access to that. That doesn't seem, it just doesn't feel right to me.
That doesn't seem right. And it's not right. I mean, it's just.
I mean, I get it. If you have a suite, you've paid tens of thousands of dollars, you know, $100,000 a year for the right to have this north end zone suite, or that you've got one of these in the south end, or whatever. I get that you can kind of bring what you want into that area because it's your own little controlled area.
That's right.
But because you sit in the south end zone club, I'm in the club level, I get a beer, but because I'm not in the club level, because I didn't give you enough money, I can't get a beer.
That doesn't feel right.
Yeah. But again,
that's the way life is.
It is. The U of A looks at it. It's like, hey, if you want to have this privilege, listen, you got to earn it.
I was on airplanes last week. I didn't get mimosas and screwdrivers before everybody else on board because I wasn't in first class. You know, there's certain privileges that go along with first class.
I thought you were first class or no class type
of guy. I am a first class individual, but yeah. I ain't paying $1,000 extra to sit in first class on a 2-hour flight. Ain't happening.
Yeah, in that case, it probably wouldn't be worth it. But yeah, there comes with those privileges.
Sometimes you pay for certain privileges. That's right. The way life is. We may not like it. It doesn't feel right that they're on board with comfy pillows and slippers and screwdrivers and mimosas while we're all suffering back here with our knees in our chest. But hey, that's what you pay. That's what you pay for.
That's right. I mean, and that's pretty much everything.
This is a different deal here.
Right, it is.
They've got to open this up, or I think they're going to continue. I think even this isn't going to stop the erosion of fan attendance.
No, it's not.
And when I'm telling you guys, when these games become 4K ready, because we're all getting these 4K TVs now, when these SEC games, I would assume either the Saturday night game on ESPN or the CBS game is going to be the first to do it, probably CBS. And when they put these babies on in 4K, that's just one more reason to stay home.
Yep. Because staying at home is adding as many privileges, if not more of them, at a higher rate.
These universities have a lot of things fighting against them. You know, you got StubHub and RazorGator and all these other secondary ticket markets where I just want to go to one or two games a year. It's not impossible for me to get a ticket.
No.
In fact,
and probably pretty cheap, depending on the
game.
Probably
get a better seat than the one I can afford. The days of I'm going to buy my season tickets to go to those one, two, or three games I really can go to are over for people.
Mm-hmm.
The cost of parking, the cost of a tailgating spot, the cost of doing the whole experience has just gotten so outrageously expensive. When you factor all of it in, from the donation to the tickets, to if you buy a private parking spot in a nearby place to do your tailgating like at, was it hogparking.com or some of these places right across from Reynolds Razorback Stadium. These are not $20 spots per game. These are thousands of dollars a year. Then you factor in the cost of your food. And it's a production for a lot of people. And you start figuring it up. You got a lot of money invested in going to these games. What can I do with that $8,000 or $10,000 a year? You know, people start asking those. And I can stay home and watch it on TV. And if I want to go to the Alabama game or the LSU game, I'll find a seat.
Yep.
Probably better than the one I was already getting.
Yep. I mean, and that's another factor that goes into it is secondary ticket markets that's been just killing it. And honestly, if you're a fan, why not? Why wouldn't you do that? Just wait for the game you really want to go to. Go on one of those websites and get a ticket where that doesn't require tens of thousands of dollars in donations. You still get a good seat because somebody's selling it. I mean, there's a lot of factors that are going up against the U of A and against all universities when it comes to college football attendance.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, the new beer of the summer with a refreshing strawberry lemonade twist. Natterdays, fun for every occasion.
They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house.
He's just joining us. We've been talking about the Razorback Baseball Regional this weekend in Fayetteville. And the first game is actually this afternoon against Central Connecticut State. First pitch will be at 1 o'clock. And, of course, the radio broadcast will begin at 12:30 p.m. with Phil Elson and Bubba Carpenter. And, you know, when we were discussing it earlier in the show, I never want to come out and say there's ever any guarantee wins or anything like that because it's sports and that never happens. There's no such thing as a guaranteed win. But it's almost like I'm so confident that I'm starting to feel overconfident about winning this game one. It's against Central Connecticut State. Is it possibly too overly confident about this game? Just not from the player perspective.
I think so, but mainly because how much do you really know about Central Connecticut State?
From what I've been able to read about them is all.
I mean, Arkansas is going to go with their normal number three pitcher in Connor Nolan, a guy that has pitched very well, particularly at home. We had Coach Van Horn on yesterday, and Dave was telling us that you know, he's very confident that Connor's going to come out and throw strikes because that's what he does at home. So Dave's feeling very, very good about this setup. It's really the first time, as we discussed, that they've pitched off, if you will, not went with their ace in game one. Sometimes you don't have that luxury. They feel like they have that luxury, and he was talking about a lot of righties batting for Central Connecticut State, and that bodes well for Connor Nolan today. So if Connor can get you into six or seven innings, that's a big question mark, but at least through five, you got to feel good. Now, if the bullpen has to take over in the second or third inning, that's not a good situation, obviously.
Yeah. What would you say?
Because you don't want to tax those arms. Not just because, obviously, Connor's had a rough start, but mainly you don't want to be starting to wear your bullpen down this early in the series.
If you're Dave Van Horn, would you say the most vital and important thing for him this postseason is to make sure that the strategy and pitching rotation is on point? Would you say that's the most important thing for him as a coach in this postseason is just to make sure that everything on that front is locked down hard?
Well, I mean,
this can be
pitching's where it's at. Yeah, I mean, they still determine the winner with runs.
Correct. But I mean, you know, Dave Van Horn can't go up there and hit for him.
No.
You know, I mean, those are still going to be the players, but the rotation to me is one of the most important things that you can have right now.
I mean, that's the decision. Who's going to start, who's not going to start. You're correct.
Right.
He can't decide. He can decide who's in the lineup, who's going to get a chance to swing the bat, but he can't go make the bat hit the ball.
Yeah, and he can decide on who comes in out of the bullpen, who's warming up there. Because to me,
I think there's a lot of things that are important.
Right, of course.
Is that chief amongst them? Perhaps.
Yeah, because as we've seen, Isaiah Campbell is money. I mean, that guy is just as good as advertised and as good as you were hoping he would be this year after being the day three starter last year. You know he's pretty automatic. Patrick Wicklander, young kid, shown a lot of great stuff this year. Looks pretty solid for the most cases. You know, you're hoping that, hey, maybe after a year or two, he's really going to be one of those ace-type pitchers. And Connor Nolan, you mentioned pitching today. You've seen some great things out of him. Seen some bad days, but had seen some great days too. And then it gets into the bullpen where it really gets tough. So it's just when I brought up also earlier about the left-handed pitchers that Arkansas has faced this year and how it's just kind of been their main bugaboo and how they've not been able to overcome that. Listen, these coaches and these teams that they're going to go up against, they're going to have film on Arkansas. And these coaches are going to know, hey, if we have a left-handed pitcher that's worth anything, we are going to make sure we save them and throw them against Arkansas, because we have seen how much they've struggled against it. So it's always going to be a chess match between Dave Van Horn and the other team and the other coaches of like, okay, so if you want to throw the lefty at it, I know that my team has struggled with it, so we're going to have to make sure that we get the runs when we can, but also make sure that we keep them from scoring, because we don't want to be put in a situation where we're going up against a left-handed batter and we're down 4-0 early. Like, you don't want to find yourself in that position. I don't know. I just don't know if Arkansas baseball right now is a team that's built to come back. I just don't know. I don't know if they're built to come back.
When they're hitting the ball well.
Oh, yeah, but that's the thing. When they're hitting
it well. Are you talking
about
coming back in a game? Or
coming back in a game.
Or over a weekend, like in a regional tournament.
Coming back in a game. If they get down early, and when I mean, I'm not talking about 1-0. I haven't seen enough from them.
So they fell behind, say, 4-0. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, 4-0, 5-0, something like that. Yeah.
That.
I just haven't seen enough from them.
We've seen times in SEC play where they've opened up a crooked number in an inning.
Yeah.
I mean, they're capable. So I don't know that I would agree with that, because this team has been very dangerous when you get all the right parts and pieces hitting at the plate, when Martin and Kerstad, I mean, you just keep going down the
right list.
Right.
And let me clarify.
I mean, this team really 1-9 can get you.
Let me clarify. I'm just referring to if you're down that early going up against left-handed pitching.
Okay.
I'm saying that. I just don't know
just
if they're built that way.
The quality of generally, now, one guy can be one guy on Cal or TCU or any other team you may face that's not an SEC team the rest of the way. And it looks like maybe you get out of this weekend, it's going to be all SEC teams, perhaps, that you
certainly
face.
Seems like it.
Till you get deeper into the College World Series, maybe. The lefties that you're going to see are probably not going to be of the same caliber we have seen in SEC play.
For sure not this weekend.
So, yeah, I get the whole lefty thing, and statistically and history says that's a problem.
Mm.
But not all lefties are created equal, I guess.
And that's right, and that's 100% true. And if Arkansas goes and faces some lefties this weekend and they have success against them, you know, that's a great thing, and obviously getting them going to move forward In the Super Regional, and if they make it to College World Series, that's another thing too. Arkansas just doesn't need to put themselves in that position.
Just hope I'm right about SEC baseball. I think it's a safe bet that the SEC should do well this weekend. It would be surprising if the league as a whole didn't win how many of these regionals out of 10. I mean, because that's what we're counting on. Is you're well prepared. That's what we're counting on with Arkansas. You are well prepared for this regional because of the level of competition you've played all year long. The last 30 conference games plus, what was it? Was it 3 in Hoover? Lost count now. 3 in Hoover.
Yeah.
So you've played 33 games against SEC competition. You are well conditioned, well prepared for this postseason based on that. That's what I'm basing a lot of this on. Who you've played. Plus, you've played some good non-conference teams along the way. But particularly those 33 SEC games you've got on your resume this year. I really expect the SEC to do well this weekend. I don't know if they get out of 6 or 7 or 8 of these series. They won't win them all. I understand that. But I ought to be well above half.
Well, I think
that goes into the why Arkansas is prepared for this.
Well, you got 6 national seeds,
right?
You know, 6 host sites. And I think that for sure the top 4 with Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, Georgia, Arkansas, those should be ones that win, you know, their region on that same convincingly, but should win, get out of it unscathed. And then you have the other teams with Ole Miss and LSU, which they've been playing well as of late. So, yeah, I feel like if you don't get at least those 6, I mean, 6 out of 10
mm-hmm.
to advance, it'll kind of be like a disappointment. And I still hold the feeling that even some of these teams that are the 2 seeds in their regional that didn't get a host, team like an Auburn or a Tennessee or a Florida who's actually a 3 seed, I could totally see one of them finding a way to upset one of these teams. Or Texas A&M, same because thing.
The same thing we've talked about with Arkansas is true for them.
Yeah,
the level of competition Florida will see this weekend is not as good as what they've faced for the last 30-some-odd games.
Could you imagine if, like, you had 10 teams in the SEC win those regionals? Could you imagine? Is there no SEC teams paired up together?
It wouldn't surprise me, but if we came in here Monday or Tuesday, because some of these regionals will go into Monday, and we said 8 SEC teams, half of the super regional teams are Southeastern Conference teams. Would that surprise you?
No.
And me either.
Not at all.
I just hope that that's not a big crow sandwich. And well, what happened to SEC? Only 4 teams got in. You know, to the super regionals. You know, just hope it's not a rough week. I don't expect it to be, though.
No, I mean, because it's not like it's a one game win or go home type of scenario. You have games to come back and games to show out for. So I don't see that happening. But I think that there'll be at least half, 5 of the 10 SEC teams making it to the super regionals. Just hopefully Arkansas is one of those teams. That's what you're going to hope for, too. So
that'd be the most disappointing thing, is to have a season where, you know, kind of surprisingly, you've been in the top 10 all year long. This wasn't a team that you really thought was going to be as good as last year, but has turned out, I think, in a lot of people's opinions, to be better than last year. A team we all feel is College World Series worthy, and then to get eliminated this weekend would be just a real bummer. Mm-hmm. I mean, just a super big letdown.
I mean, if you don't make it to the College World Series, it could probably be considered a letdown.
Yes, but if you got beat out by Ole Miss next week, that would be a little more understandable than losing to TCU and Cal or Central Connecticut.
Right.
One of those teams to beat you twice?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, because if you lose to Ole Miss, and not saying that you should or you want to, but it's like it's more understandable.
You can digest that a little bit.
Yeah, even though that's just like the bane of your existence have been this year is the Ole Miss Rebels.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, the new beer of the summer.
Scott Tabor, former Razorback pitcher, just like we do every Friday. Scott, good morning. Appreciate you coming as always. And it is official. It is postseason play. The real postseason play is here.
All the stuff they play for all year, the stuff they train for all during the offseason, it's here. That's what they play for.
So what is the feel? You're Connor Nolan. You know, you've known for several days you're going to be the starting pitcher here in the first game of the regional. It's a 1-4 matchup. But what's the mental approach? There's no school right now. You're solely focused on baseball. But it is the postseason. I would imagine even though you're in your home ballpark, comfortable surroundings, there's a little more nerves for postseason play when that bunting goes up versus a regular season game.
I don't believe it's going to be that way for Connor. And people look at it and go, well, I mean, look at those batted bats. I mean, down Texas A&M, we have 18 strikeouts one game, but we had 5 home runs, so we won the game. We hit a lot of balls hard right at people. That's just part of baseball. And you can hit one off the handle, and you know, it just doesn't always add up. I don't think there's any alarm, you know, within the team, because it is what it is. Baseball is just that way. It looks like you're in a slump because of your record, because your batting average the last 5 games or 7 games. But it's still the same guys that have been putting up double digit runs for what, 13, 14 games in a row. Hopefully today, and this could be a great recipe for setting up this whole postseason. Hopefully today is a get well day. They get out and they everything they hits in the gap. Everything they hits a good hard ground ball up the middle. So we'll see. I think it's going to set up very, very nicely for us.
Speaking with Scott Tabor, former Razorback pitcher, right now on the Morning Rush. Scott, my biggest concern and something that I discuss, of course, is anytime you go up against left-handed pitchers for Arkansas this year, quality left-handed pitchers, it seems to have always been an issue. And to me, that's going to be the biggest issue for this team this postseason. Do you agree with that, or is there something else that you see with this team?
Well, you said the big key word right there, quality left-handed pitchers. It could be a quality left-handed pitcher or a quality right-handed pitcher. The word quality is what sets you apart. You know, a good pitcher is defined by somebody who gets a lot of people out. Otherwise, they're just an apt pitcher. So when you're facing a good pitcher, you have to just take every at-bat. You know, just take every bat as it is, and you know, at some point Dave may decide to play a little small ball if we're not getting to the guy. Every pitcher has a great day. You know, you just hope that you don't run into a guy who has his career day and everything he does is perfect and every mistake he makes get hit at somebody. I think we'll get to some pitchers. You know, going through the SEC, you face great arms every outing. You face great arms every outing. So getting to the second, third guy is no longer, you know, in the SEC, it's not such a triumph. I mean, because that second and third guy would be the starters on a lot of teams across the nation. So it'll be an approach thing, I think. Like I said, I think we may see Dave go to a little small ball once in a while, knowing that our pitching's going to hold up. So we'll just kind of see how he goes by the flow of the game, which is what a great manager does.
Yeah. There's always seems to be a player in the lineup that has a breakout weekend when it gets to postseason play. Someone that maybe just stands out a little bit more. They've had a good year, but they do a little more. And this weekend, who are some players maybe you think that this could be the weekend they start showing out a little bit as we start postseason play?
You know, we've talked about it a little earlier in the season. You know, Casey Opitz. I think Casey Opitz, he's kind of the wild card. You know, he does such a great job catching and handling the pitchers and doing all the little things that make a team great. And he's got a good bat. You know, he's a switch hitting catcher. I think he's going to be a key, because when he comes up, it seems like there's always guys on base. You know, I'd like to see him come up and get some key base hits. And I'd like to see McFarland come in the lineup, get put in the lineup here and there. He's been hitting the ball pretty well near the end of the season, kind of coming around to be the player that they've been wanting him to be. And he's got some pop. So I think those two guys, you know, you're right. Every year, there's somebody who steps up and kind of becomes the unknown hero. And going into next year, now they're the guy. So all of our regular starters, they've kind of proven themselves. Everybody kind of knows where they sit. But I think those two guys are going to be a key.
Now, Scott, this is something I actually asked about Dave Van Horn too. And since you were a baseball player, you went to the postseason. When you get to that point in time in the season where the regular season's behind you, now you're really getting into the thick of things. Does your routines change? Because baseball has a lot of routines, probably more so than any other sport when it comes to the individual player. Does your mentality change, or do you just go about it business as usual, approaching it like you would any other weekend in the SEC?
Well, you know, it's a little bit different. It's a little bit more fun. It's a little bit more relaxed. It seems like we had a little bit more, I mean, practices, the bounce, you had a little bit more bounce in your step, because we were always away. We didn't have the pleasure of being able to have our postseason at home back in those days. So it was a road trip. It was going to be a fun road trip, and they treat you a little bit better. Part of the difference was you didn't show up at the park and you're the only game playing. So it's kind of like going back to Little League and travel ball. We didn't have travel ball, but all these kids grew up playing travel ball. So this is kind of taking them back to their roots. You know, it's tournament time. Go play a tournament, and you got games in front of you, games behind you, and there's – you can't get on the field and stretch an hour and a half before. You know, you get 30 minutes, 40 minutes between games. So So things are a little bit different until you hit the field. You know, then it's the same things, the same thing you do every day in SEC. But the feeling is a little bit different. Like I said, it's not more pressure packed. It seemed like it was, I don't know, I always felt like it was a little bit looser. You're just kind of there and you're going to play and have fun.
Hey, before we go, have you had a chance to look at Cal or TCU, and what do you know about those teams? What can you share with us about those two?
One thing about the postseason, yeah, when you get to the postseason, everybody's good. You know, there's a lot of teams. There's 300 and some odd teams, I think, or whatever the number is, and the final guys are there. So they're all good in some capacity. Some are better than others on paper. But in baseball, every game is a chance. Both teams have a chance. And so I think Cal probably is the top, Arkansas, Cal, TCU, and then Connecticut. That'd be the way I'd rank them. So Cal's got some great players. They got the one guy that's just the Golden Spikes Award winner, and so obviously he's a stud. I think if it gets to that point, we'll game plan around him a little bit, not let him beat us, make everybody else beat us. But if we play, it's the deal. We're Arkansas. I mean, the way the team is running and the way that we have been rolling, they're having a game plan for us, and that's a great feeling. So they'll have to deal with Campbell, and they'll have to deal with our hitters, and deal with our crowd. So that'll let it be.
Scott Tabor, former Razorback pitcher. Always appreciate you hopping on with us, Scott. Hopefully we're able to catch up with you next Friday talking about the Super Regional, my man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hope we will.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.